Memento Mori.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome to another exciting episode of I'm Horrified.
I'm Horrified. We're back.
We're back together today. We're embarking on a few batch records. So if the next couple episodes get funky, that's why.
We are, you know, back like we said we would be.
Yes. And we're proving ourselves to you still that we will be back.
We're building trust that we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yes. And I hope you do trust us. Also, I just want to say, on the note of batch recording, the last time we did a batch record, I mentioned a TikTok couple that I found very funny. And like the guy had like this thick southern accent and was talking about his wife, who he referred to.
Pookie. Yep.
So just so you guys know, like, we batch recorded an episode. I mentioned them. Just immediately they were canceled. I should have known.
Oh, no.
So I don't know. I will say this. I don't really know. So if you guys listening in the future know a reason that's horrendous, I don't know this. My understanding is just, like, we found out they're Republicans, to which I'm like, I knew that.
Yeah, we all knew it, but we didn't want to really think about it.
Yeah, like, that's not a shock to me, but I think that's, like, kind of, it was just like, oh, they have views that aren't the best.
It's like the fact that Elizabeth Olsen is a Scientologist.
Mm.
Like, you just are like, I just don't even want to go there.
Yeah,
mentally.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying now is, I know probably weeks ago you heard me mention Pookie and you were like, how can she still support them? Just know, I didn't know.
If you've been mad for weeks at this point, Sam is finally willing admit to her fault.
It was all me, and for that I am truly and deeply sorry.
And we may need to splice this episode into a sooner one if the, you know, pitchforks come for you.
Yeah,
on Twitter.
We really might. And you know what? Actually, a great segue to what I'm talking about today, Nothing Gold Can Stay. We were all enjoying Pookie and her husband, but Nothing Gold Can Stay.
Are they going to be washed away with the sands of time?
They might just be, Allie.
I mean, we all will be.
We truly all will be. That's absolutely true.
We'll become dust.
Unless we end up on Mars, and then we'll become Mars dust.
Still dust.
Still, yeah.
Definitely dead.
Definitely
dead no matter what.
So true.
That's the one, famously, the one thing you can count on.
So we're opening on that, gang.
So, memento mori.
That's the vibe just to begin this app.
Welcome to the show. We're here and we're ready.
But anyways, it feels like a pretty good segue into what I'm going to talk about today with you guys.
What are you going to talk about today, Sam?
Today, I'm going to talk about the seven wonders of the ancient world.
Surely that's fine.
It is.
Why is that horrifying?
Well, it's kind of like, it's not horrifying so much as like, here's a murder or anything.
Right.
But again, it's horrifying in kind of a way of like, nothing gold can stay. The passing of time is horrifying. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100% agree.
The things lost to memory are horrifying.
Yeah. Do you know when you like have something that reminds you of your mortality kind mm-hmm. of enter your day, like during work or like when you're doing something else, and then you just sort of slip into a fugue dissociative state for a minute?
Yeah.
And like reckon with yourself in the context of the universe.
Yeah.
And then like, you have to go back to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Sometimes I remember that my mom's going to die just like randomly and I cry for about 10 minutes.
Oh no. What was about to come out of my mouth is I feel the same way about my dog. Just problematic for so many reasons. But it's true.
Yeah.
Other people also, but it's a high priority in therapy for me, for sure.
100%. As it should be. We're pre-grieving. We're preving.
So let's talk about the black hole.
So now we're post-grieving the seven wonders of the ancient world. So I was recently playing a board game with my husband called Seven Wonders Duel, where you compete to build the wonders of the ancient world.
Oh, I thought you competed the wonders.
That would be cool,
like
too.
Like you have a pyramid fight a river or something.
Versus a hanging garden.
Yeah.
I love that idea. That's a new board game that I'm going to invent. Copyright me.
Perfect.
But no, you're just building them. But it got me thinking, like, what even are the wonders of the world? Like, I was feeling kind of, like, I know in my brain, like, oh, you know, the seven wonders of the world. But I felt like I couldn't name them or, like, know anything about them. And the answer is, they were really cool, but they are gone now because nothing cool can stay. So I thought I'd just give everyone a breakdown of, like, what even are the seven wonders of the world? And also, who decided?
I don't know. I'm assuming the pyramids are one, right?
The pyramids are one. Okay. The Pyramid of Giza is one.
Got one down. If you had a gun to my head, I couldn't name another one.
Well,
I don't know.
You named the one that still exists. All other six of them are fully gone.
Well, that sounds like their fault. Yeah. If they want me to know what they are.
You got to stick around.
You have to stick around.
So true. Let's back up even before that and figure out, like, who decided what the seven wonders of the ancient world are. The answer is kind of just one guy. But
God
came down to Moses. No, it all begins, as so many of these stories do, with Alexander the Great.
Oh, he's back.
He united, like, a really unprecedented amount of the ancient world, which gave the Greeks access to Egypt and Persia and Babylon in ways that, like, it was not so easy to travel to those areas before. And so, of course, the Greeks started doing tourism, because why wouldn't you if all of a sudden everything was united under one guy?
Certainly.
You might as well do a tourism. And there were all these amazing things they had never seen before, and they wanted to tell each other about it. And so it became very popular to create, like, lists of wonders of the world. Like, there's a few sources who had, like, lists of what they thought the wonders were. And seven, as the number, was maybe chosen because the Greeks believed it was, like, an important number. It maybe reflected perfection and, like, the number of known planets, which was five, plus the sun and the moon. The majority of the list that we look at and think of as the seven wonders of the world today comes from Antipater of Sidon, a poet who lived during the second and first centuries BC. He has a poem on the seven wonders, and it reads, "I have gazed on the walls of impregnable Babylon, along which chariots may race, and on the Zeus by the banks of the Alpheus. I have seen the hanging gardens and the colossus of Helios, the great man-made mountains of the lofty pyramids, and the gigantic tomb of Mausolus. But when I saw the sacred house of Artemis that towers to the clouds, the others were placed in the shade, for the sun himself has never looked upon its equal outside Olympus."
Oh.
Pretty good poem.
That is a good poem.
So Antipater's list is the walls of Babylon, the statue of Zeus at Olympia, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, the Colossus of Rhodes, the Great Pyramid of Giza, the Mausoleum at Halicarnassus, and the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus, which is the one at the end when he's like, when I saw the Temple of Artemis, I was like, fuck those other wonders. There's one substitution on the official list. Instead of the walls of Babylon, the Lighthouse of Alexandria is like the seventh wonder. I don't know why the walls of Babylon got a demotion from Antipater's list.
Like, I'm of a totally different mind. Why are walls impressive?
There you go. Maybe that's why.
That's people are like, it's a wall.
It's just a wall.
It's one wall. Well, Great Wall of China is impressive also.
Actually, that's a great segue to a point I want to make. The list is now considered like very famous and important. But in reality, it's just a list of, like, cool places a Greek person could go easily between the second and first centuries BC. Like, that's it. Antipater never saw the Great Wall of China or, like, Stonehenge, even though they both existed during this time period.
Right.
He had no idea North and South America even existed. I think it's important to say that because some people might look at this and go, like, oh, cool. So only the Greeks and the Egyptians made wonderful things. And that is not true. The list is like a Greek tourist guide. It is not a, like, factual list of most wonderful places. Or it's not, like, modern historians looking back and saying, these are the most wonderful places.
You know, it's reminding me of articles I would read when I was planning we were planning our wedding. Mm-hmm. That would be, like, seven most beautiful Caribbean destinations for your honeymoon. And, like, so what you're telling me is, like, this was basically, like, a magazine article.
Kind of.
It's just this guy being like, make sure you check out our famous this whatever. Yeah. Like, it's marketing, basically.
It was basically a BuzzFeed article. You won't believe these seven wonders.
You won't believe this fucking wall. It's amazing.
Now, another horrifying fact is, although I know these places are truly so famous, I am really only familiar with two of them. I'm familiar with the Pyramid of Giza and the Colossus of Rhodes, which is famously like a big statue of a guy with like his legs kind of spread and there's like ships going in and out and in Rhodes. how can I be ignorant of these places if they are so famous? Today we're going to rectify that for all of us. I'm going to give you a brief on each wonder, and sadly, the reason why 6 of the 7 do not exist anymore and cannot be enjoyed by a modern audience.
It's like they couldn't have been that wondrous.
But that's existentially horrifying. Great wonders can exist and be gone in a flash.
That's true. Your art will ultimately come to nothing in the ravages of time.
Yes, 100%. And yeah. Remember that for the rest of the episode.
We should maybe think about that with this podcast.
I think that podcast will, aliens will be listening to this in 50,000 years.
I think that we give a good breadth of stuff for aliens.
Honestly, there are worse podcasts aliens could listen to understand what...
You think Joe Rogan's going to help aliens understand exactly. America?
We talk about a lot of stuff.
He might, but wrong. Yeah. You know?
They'll get a really different vibe on us, for sure.
They would look upon us much more kindly if they find ours.
Exactly.
So we'll aim for that.
So aliens, this one's for you.
Let's start. Get us a bulletproof safe on our Amazon wish list so we can put a hard drive in there.
There you go.
Bury it in your backyard.
Let's start with the Statue of Zeus at Olympia. It's a giant seated figure of Zeus. It's about 41 feet tall, which was erected in the Temple of Zeus in 456 BC.
Oh, it's in Hercules.
I do think it's probably...
Oh, there we go. That's what... No, it's a seated statue.
Yes.
Of him sitting.
Exactly.
I've watched Hercules recently, so I'm sort of embarrassed to say, but my God. So I do know, too.
There
nice.
You go. So just to reference, 41 feet tall is like 3 stories. So imagine like a classic Boston triple decker, but it's a glorious Zeus on the throne.
Amen.
And he's holding a dunks and just living his best life. The statue of Zeus was commissioned at the end of the 5th century BC for this like new temple to Zeus. And the goal was pretty much only to outdo Athens. Athens had this massive statue of Athena in the Parthenon. And so they hired the very same sculptor, a guy named Phidias. The sculpture's made of gold and ivory plates on a wooden framework. So it must have looked very cool. It was Zeus in this painted cedarwood throne, ornamented with ebony and ivory and gold and precious stones. It might have been, like, very shiny. A fun fact is that the sculptor Phidias apparently added his boyfriend Pantarches, who was also the winner of a wrestling event at the 86th Olympiad, by carving Pantarches Kalos, which means Pantarches is beautiful, on Zeus's little finger.
Oh my God. Nepo baby.
Pantarches.
That doesn't totally apply here, but it's Nepo the same boyfriend. Energy. Nepo boyfriend.
The statue occupied half of the width of the aisle of the temple, and there's a geographer named Strabo who noted that the statue gave the impression that if Zeus arose and stood erect, the roof would topple.
Sure.
Which would be cool.
That, yeah. That's what you want, I guess, in a statue.
A later geographer and traveler named Pausanias told the story of the statue's completion, saying, "When the image was quite finished, Phidias prayed the god to show a sign whether the work was to his liking. Immediately," runs the legend, "a thunderbolt fell on that part of the floor where down to the present day the bronze jar stood to cover the place."
That didn't happen.
But also, like, if Zeus threw a thunderbolt at me, I would not know if that was good or bad.
Yeah, he might be like, "I fucking hate this."
Yeah, he might be like, "I don't like this
you
at
made
all.
My nose way too big."
Or he could be like, "That's dope, brother. I genuinely don't know." So, just an idea of, like, all the accessories Zeus was dripping with during this time also comes from this geographer, Pausanias. Zeus's head was crowned with, like, a sculpted wreath of olive sprays, and he had a gilded robe made from glass and carved with animals and lilies. On his right hand was, like, a small ivory and golden statue of Nike, the goddess of victory, which is, like, statueception. Like, it's very funny to me, like, this giant statue of Zeus holding a little statue of Nike.
He needs a little friend.
He just needs a little buddy. And on his left, there was, like, an eagle. The throne featured painted figures and wrought images and was decorated again by just like a ton of gold, a ton of precious stones. Zeus had golden sandals. Like, it must have looked so freaking cool. And it was also apparently constantly coated with olive oil, which I imagine just looked pretty cool. But it also counteracted a harmful effect on the ivory caused by the marshiness of the grove where it was built.
Feels expensive.
It feels so expensive. It sounds like it had an awe-inspiring effect even during its time. There's a story from a Greek orator, Dio Chrysostom, that's my best guess, that declared a single glimpse of the statue would make a man forget his earthly troubles. Isn't that what we all want from art?
Or they'd be like, I need some bread for this olive oil.
They're like, this is smells delicious.
I wish I had a particularly crusty piece of bread with which to dip into.
I wish I had chili flakes.
The subtle dimples in this statue.
Zeus's great pecs just covered in olive oil.
Oh my god, hot.
So how could such a piece of art no longer exist? The first attempt to disturb the statue came with the Roman Emperor Caligula. What a guy. He ordered that the statue that he called Jupiter, as well as a lot of other famous depictions of the god, should be removed from their temples and taken to Rome. So it seems like he just wanted to kind of like relocate it. Caligula was assassinated before this could happen. And there's also a story from the Roman historian Suetonius that Caligula's death was foretold by the statue, which, quote, suddenly uttered such a peal of laughter that the scaffolding collapsed and the workmen under took to their heels. So, like, the statue laughed as he died. I hope it did.
Yeah, I like that one the most so far.
Yeah. The real end of the statue of Zeus at Olympia sadly comes, of course, with the rise of Christianity. The Christian Roman Emperor Theodosius I banned participation in pagan cults and closed all the temples. And so the Olympia temple kind of just fell into disuse. It is unfortunately not even 100% clear in the historic record, like, what exactly happened to the statue. Some people say it was totally carried off to Constantinople and it was destroyed in a fire there. Others say, like, it just stayed in the temple and the temple wasn't being used anymore and there was a fire in the temple. Like, it was just kind of forgotten, which it seems so giant and extravagant.
You forget, or it sounds like even misplaced.
Yeah.
A gigantic three-story statue of Zeus.
Even sadder? No copy exists of this statue, like, in marble or bronze. There are some coins that have what people think is, like, a 2D rendering of the statue, but we really have no good idea what this super cool, amazing thing looked like. Like, we just kind of don't know.
And it's Christian people's fault.
And it is, and it's not for the first time in this article.
Yeah, seriously.
It's gonna be
They Christian don't let us have fault. Anything fun.
No, they really don't.
Whatever.
But that's the statue of Zeus at Olympia. Now we move to the Colossus of Rhodes, another big statue.
Big boy, right?
A huge boy.
Huge boy.
The Colossus of Rhodes was a statue of the Greek sun god Helios, which was erected in the city of Rhodes on the Greek island of the same name by Charis of Lindos. And it makes me laugh because every time I look at his name, I think it's Charles. And I'm like, that can't be right.
What are they the god of?
Charles? Helios is the sun god, but the statue stood 108 feet high, which is approximately the height of the Statue of Liberty from feet to crown.
Oh.
So they were building the Statue of Liberty so back in the day.
Yes. Zeus.
And it was at the time the tallest statue in the ancient world. It was a celebration of the defense of Rhodes from Demetrius I of Macedon, who had held the city under a siege for a full year. When they left, they had left behind all of their equipment, and so the Rhodians decided to sell that equipment and use the funds for this celebration statue, which is just a baller move.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool. Sense. Not only that, but the story goes that a lot of the iron and bronze used in the statue was reforged from the various weapons the Macedonian army had left behind, and that an abandoned siege tower might have been used as the scaffolding for the lower levels during construction. So, like, a real fuck you to the people putting them under siege.
Or maybe, like, one of the soldiers came up and was like, are we doing anything with this after the war? Do we have any plans for it?
Yeah. There's gotta be something cool we can do with this, right?
And they're like, oh, go ask, like, Demetrius, Nostradamus, or whatever.
There you go.
And they just let him kind of Burning Man, you know, found art.
Yeah, might as well try it.
You might.
The statue took 12 years to complete. It was completed in 280 BC, but it tragically only stood until 226 BC, less than 60 years later.
What?
So the thing about a big tall statue is that an earthquake is really going to fuck it up.
That's true. And it's on its legs.
And it's just a guy standing there. So in 226 BC, an earthquake caused significant damage to large portions of Rhodes generally. The statue apparently snapped at the knees and fell over onto the land.
Oh, shit.
Ptolemy III, who was like the governor king person at that time, offered to pay for the reconstruction of the statue. But the Oracle of Delphi gave a prophecy that was like, no, like Helios is mad at the Rhodians and that's why his statue snapped at the knees. So they shouldn't rebuild it. And so the Rhodians were like, okay, we won't. Like, we're good.
Like a toddler knocking over a Lego sculpture. I hate this.
And so no longer quite as grand, it actually still stuck around. Like, they just left the snapped at the knees statue on the ground for like 800 years.
What would you do with it, Sam?
I don't know, but I don't know that I'd leave it there. They were apparently still so impressive that many traveled to see this, like, beat-down statue. It was a total tourist attraction for years and years. But like our friend Zeus, it's unfortunately not totally clear what happened to this Colossus of Rhodes. Because of where it's located, Rhodes just has, like, a fuck ton of earthquakes. And by the 4th century, Rhodes was largely Christian. So, like, people weren't taking care of these weird pagan statue remains, and earthquakes kept coming that were continuing to, like, shake up the ground. Some people theorize the metal from the statue may have been taken to print coins eventually, but it was eventually no more. And we don't even have a good idea of where it was in Rhodes. Like, there is no, like, people have guessed, but there's really no good sign of, like, even where it was. Well,
there's not even signs of, like, the depression of the ground or anything.
Not really. Like, I think they've maybe found, like, a couple bits, but they are like, we really don't know where on this island this as tall as the Statue of Liberty statue was. Like, it's insane to me that they have no idea.
That's bananas.
It's bananas. It really is. All right, that's number two. Moving to number three, the Lighthouse of Alexandria. This is the one that Antipater did not shout out in his original list, but still seems cool.
It's a lighthouse.
The Lighthouse of Alexandria, sometimes called the Pharos of Alexandria, was a lighthouse built during the reign of Ptolemy II Philadelphus. And it was estimated to be at least 330 feet tall. To put that in perspective, for like many centuries, this was one of the tallest structures in the world. The tallest building in New York City in 1890 was only 310 feet tall. So, like, we hadn't beat that height in New York City until the 1900s. They had that in, like, the BC times.
Okay, that's impressive.
It's bonkers to me. It's so, just so giant. So difficult to beat. So the lighthouse is built on Pharos, which is the small island located like on the Nile Delta right across from Alexandria, and there was like a man-made path between the two. It was commissioned by the first Ptolemy king, Ptolemy the First Soter, and it was completed by his son, like I mentioned, Ptolemy Philadelphus, 12 years later. Legend has it that people from the island of Pharos were wreckers, i.e. people who would scavenge from wrecked ships, so they built the lighthouse to be like, you can't do that anymore.
Fair enough.
We can't keep allowing this to happen. It basically was like a giant. It had like three tiers of tower, a lower like square section, a middle section that was like an octagon, and then at the top a circle, which.
So like a lighthouse?
Yeah, like a lighthouse.
Okay.
And in the day, it had a mirror that would reflect light as like the lighthouse part of it. And then at night, it was like a massive fire they had to keep stoked.
When did they start letting the mirror swim on Mercury, which is what made all the lighthouse people go crazy?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's much later.
It might be later.
It's a fun tidbit.
That is a good tidbit. I like that a lot. The downfall of the Lighthouse of Alexandria can be summed up in one word, earthquakes. Or in four words, a whole bunch of earthquakes.
That's a lot of them.
There's so many earthquakes. It was partially cracked by earthquakes in 796 and 951. And then there was a structural collapse during the earthquake of 956. And then again in 1303 and again in 1323. That's what happens when you build a tall tower right in the middle of a couple tectonic plates. The final remaining remnants of the lighthouse disappeared in 1480 when the then Sultan of Egypt built a medieval fort on like the larger platform the lighthouse had used. But something a little bit less horrifying, we do have archaeological evidence of this guy.
At last!
We don't have for many of the previous
That's nice.
Ones. In 1968, remnants of the lighthouse were rediscovered. UNESCO sponsored like an expedition team of marine archaeologists, and they confirmed like the existence of ruins. At the time, they didn't have archaeologists who like specialized on it, but then like in 1994, they finally got a team in there who found like tons of like 40 or 50 or 60 tons of remains, including like 30 sphinxes, 5 obelisks, columns and carvings, like really cool old stuff. And another fun fact here is that the lighthouse influenced language itself. So like I said, the lighthouse was built on this island of Pharos. Pharos has become like the origin word for the word lighthouse in Greek. And then a lot of Romance languages like French, where it's fare, Italian and Spanish, where it's faro, and like Portuguese, which is far all, and even Bulgarian is like far. So it's like the impact of this lighthouse in language, we still reference it, which I think is very cool.
That's nice for that to have.
That's nice. The bummer is that it had to go through like 13,000 earthquakes.
Is there anything else that's going to take these bad boys down?
It's mostly Christianity and earthquakes. I got to be honest.
If I had a nickel.
I got to be honest with you. Next up. Mausoleum at Halicarnassus, aka Tomb of Mausolus. It's a tomb built around 350 BC in like present day Turkey. Back then it's Halicarnassus, for a governor of the first Persian Empire and his sister wife, Artemisia of Caria. We just all have to accept the sister wife thing. Let's get over it right now.
I mean, what is this, like year three or whatever?
BC for sure.
Yeah.
It's maybe fine.
I'm assuming we have sister wife business going on.
Let's hope. But so Artemisia and Mausolus ruled Halicarnassus and the surrounding territory for 24 years. Mausolus was descended from the local people, but he was kind of like Greek in the way that he liked to do things. He designed things in the Greek way. And so he decided to build this magnificent new capital. He chooses Halicarnassus. They spend these huge amount of tax money to establish and embellish their city. And so in 353, when Mausolus dies, it's like, oh, baby, we already had plans for his tomb. We already knew. And Artemisia is kind of left behind to rule alone and to finish this beautiful tomb for him. The tomb is, of course, so famous. Mausolus's name is now the name for all stately tombs, the word mausoleum.
Oh, there we go.
Comes from this one guy. So the tomb's erected on this hill overlooking the city. The whole structure is within this enclosed courtyard. And then like right at the center is the tomb itself. There's stone lions, stone warriors on horseback, gods and goddesses. It was like 148 feet high at the tallest point. There were action scenes, like, in the bas-reliefs. It was, like, the Amazons and other big wars. I was thinking if I had a tomb and I needed action scenes for my bas-reliefs, I think I would do Fast and Furious.
Oh, for sure.
Probably the fifth one.
I guess I'd do scenes from Hercules. That's just fresh in my mind right now because of the Zeus thing. But it fits. I'm fine with it. Like, I can't think of anything else right now, but I'd be fine to, like...
It feels good.
Yeah, hit publish on that.
I'd maybe also do In the Mummy, where they're, like, running, and there's, like, the pharaoh's face is chasing them. Not the pharaoh, the bad guy in The Mummy. And, like, he's got his giant sand face chasing their plane. That could be, like, a pretty good one, too.
That would be a good one, too.
There's much to think of. Guys, if you ever pay for our mausoleums, please consider these things. So, it existed... This one existed for a really long time. The mausoleum existed in Halicarnassus for 16 centuries. It survived when the city fell to Alexander the Great... And it was undamaged by attacks from pirates in 62 and 58 BC. But a series of earthquakes shattered the columns and sent the bronze chariots crashing to the ground. By 1404, only the base of the mausoleum was still recognizable. So we have, like, medieval people talking about, like, this is where the mausoleum was. But, like, there's not really any cool parts left of it. It's gone now.
I feel like a lot of... historical stuff is that way. When you go visit it, they're like, this is the grass patch where something very important likely happened.
Yes.
And you all just get to say, ooh. But yeah. I love it too.
Yeah. It reminds me of the last season of like Parks and Rec, and they're looking for like William Henry Harrison's hunting lodge and they find it's like one brick or something.
Oh my God. Well, if people are familiar with, we're very close to Salem, Massachusetts, and there is maybe my favorite place in the world. Scatter my ashes there. There is a like museum, a wax museum / theater, like high school theater production venue that reads, like does a little play of the Salem Witch Trials, just like reading it right off the page.
Love it.
But in full costume. It's excellent every time. I've seen many casts. And then you go downstairs and it's a bunch of horrifying wax people in like the dungeons, because it was supposed to be the site of the dungeons. And then they're like, all right, and now you're going to get to see an actual piece of the witch's jail.
Ooh.
It is one rectangular piece of wood. It's literally like a 2x4, and everyone's just like, good. Oh. Go, great. We love it. It's just the perfect way to end that whole situation.
I love that.
I'll put their contact information in the show notes. I swear to God, go. Don't go to the good museums. No. Go to that.
Go to that for sure. I love that. Yeah, it also reminds me, I'm so sure we've told this story on the podcast before, so I'll tell the abridged version, which is we went to Bath in England.
Yes.
And they had a Jane Austen museum, and we were like dumb little Americans. They were like, dope, Jane Austen, amazing. And then the museum was just about how much Jane Austen hated Bath.
She
and
hated it there.
Did not like being there.
She wrote a whole book about how much she hated it.
It was me and Allie and our dear friend Leah, friend of the podcast, like just walking around like, so she hated it here? Like, it was such a bizarre experience.
And all the people who were dressed up were like, yeah. She didn't like it here.
So, to sum up, yes, that's also what the Mausoleum of Halicarnassus is like now.
Need a break from the horrifying reality of real life? Well, do we have a sexy deal for you?
Go to adamandeve.com and use our special code HORROR for 50% off almost any item and free shipping. That's HORROR at checkout for 50% off and free shipping. Order now and get ready to...
Next up, Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Here's an interesting one. Hanging Gardens of Babylon were described as this remarkable feat of engineering. It was a tiered series of gardens. So when you stood back from it, it looked like a large green mountain. And it was said to have been built in the ancient city of Babylon near present-day Hilla in Iraq. According to legend, the Hanging Gardens were built alongside like this grand palace by King Nebuchadnezzar II for his wife, Queen Amethyst, because she missed the green hills and valleys of her homeland. Very romantic.
Aww.
Here's the interesting part. It is deeply unclear if the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were real.
What? Well, why would people talk about it?
It might have just been like a poetic creation, because there's like no documentation in Babylonian sources of what this was. We don't even have evidence of Nebuchadnezzar's wife existing. Like, it's possible that she did, because just nobody wrote stuff down about women back then. But, like, we have no information. A ton of records exist of Nebuchadnezzar and, like, all the stuff that he was doing. But it does not mention any kind of garden, which if I made a super cool garden, I'd definitely write about it in my diary.
So do we maybe have a case of, like, a bard playing around with narrative fiction and... things get out of hand.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. And so that's the complicated thing. There are writers who like write description of the gardens and like how they were irrigated and the construction and the design with like a good amount of details. But there's no Babylonian sources and there's no archaeological evidence that's been found. So it's like, maybe it's in the Euphrates and we can go in that river and dig around. But it's just like very confusing. And to me, horrifying. Like, how can we not even be sure it was real? It was there or it wasn't. Like,
it
what the
feels
fuck?
More likely that it wasn't there.
I know.
Like, that feels like the more likely option.
It's so bizarre. So
I also, when I think of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, I think of like in the springtime when you go to Home Depot and they have the outdoor section and they have all like the hanging annuals.
Yes.
In the little pots.
There you go.
Which is beautiful.
Maybe it was like that. Or maybe it did. Maybe Home Depot didn't exist at all.
Maybe he took his wife to the Home Depot
and told her he built her a garden.
And told her, he's like, everything in this Home Depot is yours.
He was a gaslighting motherfucker.
Yeah. Sure, he like wrote her a poem about the gardens. She's like, you didn't even make it.
It's not even a real...
You have 5 million people who you could boss around to make the garden.
You're literally the king of Babylon.
And you didn't even get me flowers. Like, you're talking about a whole garden. I don't even have flowers.
So yeah, horrifying to me that we don't even fucking know if this garden existed.
And that sounds like the funnest one.
I know, right?
Statues, whatever. Wall. I'm excited for you to tell me about that one.
No, the wall's not on the official list.
It's not? Oh, thank God.
They took the wall off this list.
I was so ready to be aggressive. But yeah, like none of that sounds that exciting. But the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. All right, now we're talking.
May or may not have existed. Unclear.
Probably didn't.
Probably didn't.
Probably fictitious.
All right, number six. Here's the favorite wonder of good old Antipater. You might remember he said, the Temple of Artemis. When I saw the sacred house of Artemis, the towers to the clouds, the others were placed in the shade, for the sun himself had never looked upon its equal outside Olympus. He loved this fucking temple. So the Temple of Artemis was also known as the Artemision, or the Temple of Diana, because Artemis, Diana, you know. And it was a Greek temple located in Ephesus in present-day Turkey. So the temple was actually destroyed and rebuilt, like, multiple times. It was a sacred site before it ever had a temple on it. And then, according to legend, the Amazons built the first temple there that was, of course, destroyed by a flood in the 7th century BC.
Perfect.
The new temple was then built, which was sponsored by, like, one of the overlords of Ephesus, and it was designed and constructed around 550 BC by the Cretan architect Chersephron and his son Metagenes, a Nepo baby.
Oh, yeah.
It was supposedly the first Greek temple built in marble. It was, like, over 300 feet long and about, like, 150 feet wide. It had, like, images of the goddess. It had, like, ginormous, beautiful carvings in the columns. It had, like, a beautiful ebony statue of the goddess. And then it burned down. It burned down.
How does marble burn down?
So this was interesting. So various sources describe this, like, burning down of as the temple as, like, the act of arson by one man whose name was Herostratus, who set fire. I guess that, like, the temple itself was marble, but the roof beams were wood.
Fair.
And so he lit those on fire. But apparently he did it purely because he was seeking fame. Like, he just wanted to be famous for something.
Oh, like that guy who shot Ronald Reagan. Yeah. So Jodie Foster would notice him. Those two situations are exactly the same.
Well, so now there's a term, herostratic fame, which means, like, someone committing a criminal act to become famous.
Oh, I love that. Herostratic.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to work that into a conversation and just be hated by whoever has to hear it for my pretension.
It feels like what, like, Jake Paul and Logan Paul are doing is, like, just fame at any cost, a herostratic fame.
Herostratic fame. Oh, my God. I love that.
So, in Greek and Roman historical tradition, the temple's destruction coincides with the birth of Alexander the Great, because it says Artemis was too preoccupied with Alexander's delivery to save her burning temple. She was like, I'm bringing in the greatest warrior of all time. I'm busy.
She's like, I'm the goddess of the hunt. I'm hunting.
Yeah.
So, that.
But they rebuild it again. Third time is the charm, surely. This time it's Alexander the Great himself who offers to pay for the temple's rebuilding. The Ephesians tactfully refuse, saying it would be improper for one god to build a temple to another. Everybody is fucking so thirsty for Alexander.
Oh my God.
Everybody wants to give Alexander a ride.
It's so true, though.
But they did eventually rebuild this temple. Work started in 323 BC and continued for many, many years. It was even larger and grander than the second. There's no way it'll ever be destroyed. Actually, it got closer. It it stood for 600 years, which is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It appears in a lot of, like, early Christian accounts of Ephesus. And according to the New Testament, the appearance of the first Christian missionary in Ephesus caused the locals to fear for the temple's dishonor. And there's this apocryphal tale of the temple's destruction that the Apostle John prayed publicly in the Temple of Artemis, exorcising the demons. And then the altar split into many pieces and half the temple fell down, instantly converting the Ephesians who wept and prayed and took flight in that moment. That's obviously probably not true.
Yeah.
In reality, again, it's just a situation of, like, There are still, like, Roman and early Christian accounts of the importance of the temple, but in 268 AD, historians said that a raid by the Goths laid waste to populous cities and set fire to the renowned Temple of Diana at Ephesus. That fire, it's unknown, like, how bad the damage was, but at that point, again, like, the Roman Empire was becoming Christian, so the pagan temples were getting closed down no matter what. So it's just a case of, like, it kind of became derelict, and then
writing,
it was gone.
Writing was on the marble wall.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the gorgeous marble wall. Once again, Christianity just ruins cool architecture. But now, let's end on a positive note. Let's end feeling good. The Great Pyramid of Giza still exists, baby!
I know about it.
Great Pyramid of Giza, it's the largest of the Egyptian pyramids, and it served as a tomb to the pharaoh Khufu, who ruled during the Old Kingdom period of Egyptian history. Egyptian history is so fucking crazy. They were just doing cool stuff for, like, longer than anything ever did anything. Like, just, like, as far back as the old, like, kingdom is in Egypt is, like, the entire span of, like, it's just crazy.
It's amazing.
It's literally amazing. I'm a big, like, Egyptology nerd, so I could talk about this for 25 hours.
Did you have the Egyptology book?
Yes.
The big weird book that said Egyptology on it?
Of course I did.
And there was another one that was, like, Dragonology.
I did not buy that one, but I remember
that one. But it's, like, Egyptology's real.
Like, yes, there was a Fairyology one, too.
That's a stretch. That doesn't work with an ology.
I know.
But yes, I had that book too.
I love that. Oh God. My mom still might have that.
That must be on eBay somewhere.
I gotta find it. I gotta call my mom to ask her to give it to me. So it was built over a period of about 27 years. It is the oldest of the seven wonders of the ancient world, but the only wonder that has remained largely intact. It was the tallest human-made structure for more than 38,000 years. It was the first and best, baby. We love the Great Pyramid of Giza. I would love to go someday. That's like a total bucket list trip for me, is to make it to Egypt and see the pyramids. I feel like it would be so cool.
That would be so awesome.
But again, like, we're leaving on a place of, like, it would be so cool to see those. It also would have been fucking cool to see the Colossus of Rhodes. It also would have been cool to see, you know, the Temple of Artemis.
Sure.
Yeah. And it bums me out. It makes me sad that not only are they gone from, like, earthquakes and Christianity and all these other reasons, but, like, so many of them, there is, like, nothing left. There is not even conclusive evidence of where they stood, how they looked, if they existed at all. Like, it makes me feel scared for, in 1,000 years, 2,000 years, like, what will be left of us? What will be left of our civilization?
Have you read one of my favorite poems by our boy, Percy Shelley?
Oh, yes.
Called Ozymandias.
I sure have read Ozymandias.
And that really captures the sort of, is esoteric the right word?
Yeah, it could be.
It could be totally wrong.
I genuinely don't know.
It sort of captures the
existential horror?
Yes. It sort of captures the existential horror of building great monuments and trying to grasp with the ends of your fingers to power, even though death sweeps us all away like the tide.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, anyways, that was... I know this episode tonally must have been very odd, because it was, like, mostly just me talking about cool history, but then being like, but it's gone now, fucker. But, like, it does. It really bums me out.
And we'll die, and you'll die.
And we'll all die, and our moms and dogs will die.
Yeah.
It's just like, what the fuck?
We'll all die, but mainly moms and dogs. Mainly those two things. Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't have a great way to end this episode.
I don't, like, either. I don't feel
I guess my
like
way
I'm
to end this episode,
fun.
Here's how, sorry. I guess the way to end this episode is, like, let's treasure the moments that we have and the things we can see now, because there's, in a historical sense, nothing stays for sure.
Mm.
And in a literal day-to-day sense, like, you never know metaphorically when the rise of Christianity is going to happen. You know what I mean? You never know when two tectonic plates are going to shift in your life.
Oh, metaphorically.
Metaphorically,
shift.
I'm saying.
Maybe we could take it from, like, the life-changing magic of tidying up angle, where it's like, what value does this have in your life? Mm. Like, think when you're bringing shit into your house and you're, if it's feeling cluttered and you're like, oh, I have so much stuff. I wish I had less stuff. This is making me so anxious. Stare at it and be like, will you come forward with me and others unto the sands of time?
Mm.
And then maybe donate it.
Yeah.
I should get a donate bag together. Every so often I do that. Yeah. And like, I'm just like, get the stuff together. But then there's overconsumption to think, oh God, I'm in a bad headspace now, Sam.
That's how you know it was a good episode about horror. If you're left in a really bad headspace. I tried to, there's a consignment store in my town and I had a whole bunch of stuff I wanted to get rid of. So I was like, oh, maybe I can take it to the consignment store and it's some great stuff. When I tell you they bought one thing for me.
Okay, I actually have, and we're probably over, right?
We're fine. It's
fine. We're fine. Okay, I'll
edit it out if I need to.
I will say this. I was genuinely furious. I was at a Buffalo Exchange, and I know nobody gets their clothes taken at Buffalo Exchange, but I'm a fat person. I'm a fat woman. And so I went to their plus size section, and it fucking sucked. It was all like Forever 21 and Shein. And a lot of it like wasn't like, it just was really low quality and icky. And the person who was ringing me up, like, breezed right past all of my dresses and stuff like that. A lot of it was dresses and, like, you know, wraps and stuff like that. And a lot of them were, like, from Anthropology.
Yeah.
From ModCloth. Like, they were nice, nice pieces of clothing. And I was like, yeah, okay, if you're gonna turn these down, can you get someone to give you better clothes? Because, like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think I sent an email, like, just so you know, you are not doing a good job with that part of the store. And I'm not, and I was trying to make the email be like, I'm not just bitter because you didn't take my stuff. Don't take my stuff if you don't want to, but come on.
Yeah.
Give us something. More effort.
I noticed a little bit of that in my consignment experience, too. Like, what they took from me, I bought on, like, Amazon for $20.
Right?
And then I had, like, nicer things that they totally didn't take. And what the reason they told me was, like, a lot of the stuff I had were, like, probably, like, semi-formal or, like, more formally dresses. And they were like, we just don't really buy that here. But I was kind of like, interesting. Like,
interesting. I thought that's what consignment shops were for.
I don't know.
Like, nice things that you pass on.
It's very, but nothing good can stay. That's the moral of the story. Rate and subscribe to this podcast.
Now that you feel this way, maybe you're getting off the train to work. Yeah, I thank you. Thank you, Sam. I'm sorry. I'm being a pest. Thank you so much. This was actually really fascinating. That was mean. This was actually really fascinating.
Like, Sam, that's so weird that you actually did kind of a good job.
That's not what I meant.
That's so fucked up that you can actually do a good job.
It's very, very interesting. I love when you do history things. That's my favorite. It didn't have to do with, like, a sort of mentally unstable woman in the Victorian era. Which is usually your history gig, but yeah. I like taking it further back. But you make a good point, everyone. If we've been really enjoying, a lot of you have been leaving us really, really nice reviews. I cry when I read them. And we so appreciate you if you've left a review. If you haven't, that is something that would really, really help us out. If you could just take 2 seconds and throw a review on Spotify or on Apple, like Apple Music. Or Apple Podcasts, or I don't know how anything works. Wherever the little button is, that would mean just genuinely so much to us, and it really helps us out. So we would appreciate that.
Totally.
And we can't wait to come back with something easy breezy beautiful. Cover Girl. Yes. I think actually it's really rough.
Oof.
It's mine.
We'll see.
I guess we'll see. And they're like, unsubscribe.
Yeah, they're like, I guess this will be my last.
I guess we'll see.
No, if it's an Allie episode, it's gonna be good. So until
babe. The same episode is going to be good.
Until that great Allie episode. Bye-bye, horror honeys.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
I'm Horrified is a Hemlock Creatives production. Recorded and produced by us, Sam Bierstow and Allie Gavin in Boston, Massachusetts. Our art is by Leah Brilliard and Allie Gavin. You can find us on Twitter at I'm Horrified Pod. And at I'mHorrifiedPodcast.com. And you can tell us what horrifies you at imhorrifiedpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us directly on Patreon, you can get our podcast early and ad-free, as well as bonus episodes of our members-only minicast, I'm Thrilled! Check us out at patreon.com/imhorrified. And if you liked hanging out with us, tell your friends, share us on your socials, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for stopping by, Horror Honeys.